WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the spring. Baseball has sprung, the opening of the new CFG Bank Arena, Springsteen, the Eagles, we got concerts, we got things, and the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. Brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation, Costas, then Fadley's, and next week we're going to be at Pappas up in Bel Air celebrating the opening of their new place. It's Oprah's favorite crab cake. Come on out and have a crab cake with us in Bel Air. And then we're going to be back downtown at Captain Larry's, first time crab cake there on the 27th of the month, and a whole litany of places into May. You know, I mentioned crab cakes to people in town. They're like, hey, Ness, I'll meet you over here. I'll meet you over there. But to the out-of-town people, they're like, got to get down to an Orioles game. Mike Vaccaro has covered sports, a little bit of an Oscar Madison trail from the Midwest and the South to New York. He has been there for two decades doing that tabloid thing on the back at the New York Post. Nobody does it better. Writes books about the Yankees and stuff like that. Also had a health challenge as well, and it's great to see you back on the playing field, making threes, hitting them out of the park, doing all that stuff, and writing. And, you know, I've been a wannabe Oscar Madison my whole life, Mike. So seeing you get back to doing what you do and bringing real, honest to God columnist onto the program is always great. How are you? How you feeling to open a 2023 campaign?
Yeah, I'm doing good, my friend. I am. I'm feeling as good as I've felt in years. And it's going great. Still having fun doing the job. You know, like you said, I'm one of these guys who takes the job of columnist very seriously. I know it's an honor to occupy that space in the New York Post. Jimmy Cannon used to write that column. So, I mean, it's, you know, I've got a lot to live up to every day, but it's fun. I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
You know, I'd go in a million directions because I was in an antique shop a couple weeks ago and I got the old 1966 because I'm a newspaper guy. It's where my start was at the News American. John Stedman in the 66 preview said, it says here, Orioles will win the World Series. Printed October 4th. I have the whole section. Aparicio was in it, hence how I got here back in the 60s. And, you know, just all these years later, just to touch it and feel it, being a columnist. Let's start with that then. I mean, we'll do Yankees, do Orioles and all that. Columnists, newspapers, I still get in the subway in New York. I still see, you know, the remnants of what was a whole life of it that began my life as a reporter and all these years, 31 years on radio. But all I ever wanted to be was you. And I told Lupica that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it's great. And you're right. That's still the kick, is when you're on the subway or when you're at a, you know, cafe in New York and you see people with the papers expertly folded up. That's all I really ever wanted to do. And, you know, I've been lucky enough that, you know, some people, you know, want to grow up and become an astronaut or something. And, you know, when I was 7 or 8 years old, I declared to my father I wanted to be the sports columnist for the New York Post. And, you know, there aren't a lot of people that I know who get to grow up and do exactly what they said they wanted to do when they were in second grade.
But it's you great. And I are the same human being. I mean, that's all I ever wanted to do was be John Stedman.
I've often thought that, to be honest with you, Nestor, because all I ever did when I was a kid was I immersed myself in the papers. You know, in New York, when I was growing up, you know, it was still the Daily News and the Post and the Times. We didn't necessarily read the Times much in my house, but you know, there was Newsday, there was the Long Island Press. It was great. You know, if you were a sports fan and specifically if you were somebody who had a kind of a bent to want to be Oscar Madison, I mean, let's face it. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people from our generation, you know, Oscar Madison was a sports writer. Like, wow, you can really do that for a living. And as you and I both discovered, you know, to our great good fortune, you can do that for a living if you get a couple of breaks along the way, and you know it's amazing what can happen.
Mike, my old man would have hated Oscar Madison's hat because of that Mets thing from '69, and you come on this program and you just bring that pirate hat. And you know what? I'll doff my cap to Clemente, but 79 was,
sports, yep.
I was 11 years old in 79. We lost game 7, right? So like, you know, those are hard times for me, but from a baseball perspective, you can't even hate the Pirates because they have less of a chance than the Orioles of ever being the next team to have a parade around here. You write about the Yankees and the Mets, and it's still a thing there. The Orioles opened in Boston last week. It's still a thing there. Although, I mean, I've had Shaughnessy and Bob Ryan on this program for all my life, for 30 years, those guys have been coming on. Shaughnessy ran around with Earl Weaver here back in the day, right. Was here. And they tell me baseball's number 3 in Boston now, behind the Patriots, behind the Celtics. And you know, for New York and being all that it is, and I, you know, I see what's happened to horse racing here. And then right. I go up to New York when I think of like the Post and those things were built on horse racing and boxing, 100%. You know, back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. 100%. Modern vernacular for a columnist. What makes your bell ring other than just you've always written about the Yankees, the Rangers and whatever. But as a columnist, what's your job these days?
You know, I think there are two things. One, I mean, look, we have to keep the, you know, the powerful accountable, right? So, I mean, for years, you know, it meant getting after the Wilpon family because they treated the Mets like a, you know, like a second-rate operation. You know, for years, it meant getting after the Johnson family with the Jets because it didn't seem like they cared very much about what happened there. For years, it was getting after, it's still, you know, in some ways, means getting after James Dolan because he runs two teams here, you know?
But that begins with Steinbrenner, right? I mean, was there that kind of pressure on ownership in the 50s and 60s? If there were, the Dodgers and Giants wouldn't have skipped, probably, right?
Yeah, you know, they skipped in spite of the fact they were getting killed. So, I mean, I think it probably isn't that much different. I mean, because let's face it, I mean, the bottom line is the almighty buck now, and it was certainly – that's the reason why Walter O'Malley left for California. And so they didn't care if Dick Young or Milton Gross was going to go after them in the papers.
John Stedman, we lost the Colts and the Bullets. I mean, we, you know, these municipalities have gone, even New York lost teams, right? Oh, yeah. Literally.
Yeah, we mean, and I think in some ways, Baltimore and New York and, you know, are soulmates that way, along with other places that, you know, it's one of the great ironies, right, about Baltimore is that they lost the Colts and they took the Browns, but the Browns, you know, they got their own team. I mean, it's you know, St. Louis. You know, was you know, took the Rams and they lost the Rams. I mean, it's really kind of a, I think it's a story unto itself about what happens to a city's, you know, a city's self-esteem and reputation when they lose a team, when they get a team. You know, it's really, that's a whole conversation unto itself.
That's like a Springsteen song, "Whores and Gamblers."
That's true. You know, and look, I mean, there is still, yeah, there are still enough people in New York who are around when the Giants and the Dodgers were, who still find that to be the greatest felony of all time. And look, I mean, if I had grown up a Dodgers fan and suddenly I couldn't root for the Dodgers anymore, I could, but I couldn't watch them anymore because they were 3,000 miles away, or the same thing with the Colts, you know, in Baltimore, I feel the same way. And I think that's, you know, I guess that's a roundabout way.
Mike, I keep this. This is my childhood Baltimore Colts belt buckle. Awesome. I keep this 5 feet away because it's always there. And I wore it as a little boy. We got it at Sears over at the mall.
That's awesome.
And, you know, like, but, you know, I've been buying old Houston Oilers stuff here as well. But yes, the modern part of being a columnist, you said hold power accountable. Let's keep going down that road, because I really think that in my town, they've thrown me out after 27 years, right? Like, I don't get – they credential subject, my employee, but not me.
This is a subject close to your heart, I know. So, yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's a fascinating thing that there's no one of any power in the media here to hold them accountable because they've bought the whole media here, right? Yeah. Right? Yeah. So – and the Sun is where it is, and the Banner's trying to get where they're going, and what and whether it'll ever have what you – had in New York, which is you're not going to pull this, although Trump, I guess, pulled it off until like Tuesday, right? Pulled it off all of a lifetime, right? Managed to do it. But there is a notion that Steinbrenner sort of brought the heat onto everyone across baseball, across sports, to say, I want to win and I'll cut your throat to win, right?
Yeah, for sure. And he kind of raised the standard for how we look at modern sports owners too, because I think really the first, if you're an owner, the things the fans want to know is, A, you care. They want to know that you care as much as they do. Even if you don't, you got to put on an act that you care as much as they do, because they do care. You know, fans go to bed at night and they don't sleep if they lose a 3-2 game in the 11th inning. And they want to know that the owner feels that way too. One reason why Mets fans love Cohen so much, Steve Cohen so much, isn't just his money, but he's clearly a Mets fan. I mean, he spent opening day with the 7 line, you know, which is a group of rabid Mets fans down in Miami. You know, and I think that's, you know, that really matters. Number two, close behind, is that you back up that fandom by, you know, by using your resources to make sure that they're as good as they can be. I mean, Steinbrenner was always that way. You know, he would never go for a half dollar if he could pay a dollar, and that's the way it is now with Steve Cohen. And you know, and third, I think is just that they want to be able to have a good experience when they decide to invest their money in your product, which is to go to a game or to, you know, or to buy a season package or whatever it is. It's really not a lot to ask for, I think. And I think owners, it's remarkable actually how much owners have spaced on that through the years, not realizing how important all of those things are.
Well, you know, Art came off the boat here with the stolen Ravens, brought a family business here that he was always in front of in Cleveland. Say what you want about Art, but Art was at the theater, Art was at the clinic, Art was in the city, Art was writing checks, Art was having banquets, Art was putting on college football games, Art was trying to get a baseball stadium. But like all of that, Art showed up here, a very old, kind of tired version of that, and David, but they had to rebuild it again. And the Ravens were built here, PSL money, all of that stuff. But it was built on like shows like mine over at the barn with Tony Siragusa that felt like Artie Donovan a generation before and Odell Bracey and all of that. That never really existed in New York, you know, like from a community standpoint. I wonder what ties people to the New York Knicks and Rangers. I literally, Dolan's such a prick. I saw him suing the attorneys for walking into the, like, I see all that, and I love the Garden. I want to come up to the Garden and see a show. I might be coming up to see Depeche Mode next week, because anything at the Garden is worth $100 more than anywhere else for me. That's how much I love coming up there. But I wonder, like, who are these people paying $800 to go to Knicks games, and like why, and hanging on? And the Orioles, there's been such attrition here as the Yankees come in here. And you know what it's looked like here the last 20 years, 25 years since this gem of a ballpark was built. But tying to sports in a place like New York, it's so different. And I've never really understood what makes people come into the big city and spend all this money on teams that are, you know, competing, but they're making bucks. I mean, they're about making money. You go to Yankee Stadium, you swim in the money that they're making.
It's true. I mean, look, I mean, I just think the whole dynamic of sports fans is interesting to see how it evolves, because look, when you and I were kids, I mean, you know, you grew up an Orioles fan, a Colts fan, because, you know, you were in Baltimore. I grew up a Mets fan or an Islanders fan, whatever, because I grew up on Long Island in New York. And you know, a lot of it had to do with geography. A lot of it had to do with, you know, it was a family heirloom. I mean, if your grandfather or your father was a Giants fan, you were probably a Giants fan. That's just the way it was. You see that, you know, you've seen that over time evolve in New York. I mean, I think very similar to what you're describing with the Orioles, there was a lot of football fan attrition when I was growing up in the 70s, because the Jets and the Giants were so terrible. So, I mean, it was not unusual, like in your group of friends, there'd be a Steelers fan, a Dolphins fan, a lot of Cowboys fans, obviously. But now it's even more so, because there's access to everything. If you grew up in, you know, if you grew up in Silver Springs, Maryland, you know, and you decide you want to be a Chargers fan, you can watch all the Chargers games, right? If you grew up in West Hempstead, New York, like I did, and decide that you want to be a Portland Trailblazers fan because you're a big Dame Lillard fan, guess what? You can watch all their games too. And so there's nothing, the traditional bindings are there anymore. And so I think that's different also. But so I think it makes it even more amazing when a team like the Knicks, not so much this year because they've been successful this year, but, you know, most of the last 25 years when they've been just been garbage, you know, they still put 17, 18,000 people in the stands. A lot of that is tourists, you know, I mean, people from out of town who want to see the Garden. But there's enough people who just, you know, keep the faith. And it's weird because the Knicks specifically, in between their two periods of prosperity, the 70s, the great teams then, and the 90s, I mean, nobody went to the Garden. I mean, you would go to the Garden when I was a kid, and there'd be 7,000, 8,000 people there, you know? And you know, it's like, you know, the Mets, when I was growing up a Mets fan, I mean, in the awful days of the late 70s, early 80s, I mean, you know, one year, 1979, they drew 788,000 fans in New York City, you know, in a building that, you know, a couple, you know, that years later would draw 3 and 4 million people.
I thought Ed Crane Pool was more interesting than that, Mike.
Yeah, I did too, believe me. I mean, and you know,
and John Stearns, all those guys,
honestly,
right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you could define my childhood from about 1974 to about 1986 or so,
there's a lot more Felix Mion there than there is, you know, Mookie Wilson.
Hey, in my neighborhood, you know, all the kids wanted to be Felix Mion, choking up and you get the bat. You know, I mean, he was our guy, you know, and in a lot of ways. Look, I mean, you know, when I look back on my fandom, okay, I mean, I found it a lot more enjoyable when my teams stunk. I mean, but that's just, you know, me. I mean, but also as a fan in those years, I mean, I wasn't really investing much. I went to one game a year. I watched the game on free TV. I listened to it on radio. It's a lot different situation now for fans. I mean, fans are expected to pay up more now. And, you know, so as a result, they're more demanding, and they should be more demanding because, you know, they're part of the product now.
He is Mike Vaccaro. You can read his work out on the interwebs and at New York Post and NY Post and all of the comings and goings of New York sports. He's caught in the crosshairs of every Aaron Rodgers rumor that leads to a Lamar Jackson rumor and all that. You know, again, I guess from the columnist standpoint in accountability and ownership, and to your point, what the Jets have put their fans through and what the Giants have put their fans through lately. And I'm an apostle to Ernie Accorsi. Ernie was a little bit of a crazy uncle to me back in the day. So was George Young. He was the mean school teacher uncle, as I'm sure you remember. But you know, they were run by Baltimore people for years when we didn't even have a franchise after Ernie left Art, all of that, beat them in the Super Bowl now 22 years ago. But you know, the accountability for the younger Steinbrenner, for the Mets ownership groups that have come and gone now, and now they're on to a new thing, that there's something about you as a columnist and everyone in New York that really, the owners are always in the spotlight, whereas the creep that's owned the baseball team and now this kid that was born on third that thinks he hit a triple jumping out this week. John Angelos has been in the media four or five times in the last 5 days. That's five more times than his old man has been in since he got booed on Cal Ripken night in 1995. literally.
Sure. No, it's true. I mean, look, and you know, hey, I think it's part of the reason why owners become owners in the first place. At least that's the case in New York. You know, I mean, Steve Cohen could have, you know, lived a pretty happy life with $15 billion in his savings account.
Could have bought an island.
I mean, he could have done anything he wanted to do. But, you know, and maybe some people know he was the inspiration for Acts on Billions. But the fact is, I mean, he was living a fairly anonymous life, you know, and now he's not. Now he can't go anywhere without being recognized. Now everybody knows who Steve Cohen is. Now, whenever the Mets do well, it's, you know, Steve Cohen's Mets. And when you know, the Mets are struggling, Mets have lost the last two games now, by the way, by scoring 19-0 to the Brewers. So, you know, maybe it's not so great, you know, being the Steve Cohen Mets right now for Steve Cohen, but guys become owners because they it allows them an opportunity to be known, you know, and in ways that other businesses just do not. And so as a result of that, the flip side of that is that we know and we care about them and their targets. And their targets of praise, you know, when things go well, and targets of scorn when things don't, because ultimately everybody hates their boss, right? I mean, at the end of the day, they don't hate their boss. They've got issues with their boss, and sports team owners are the ultimate bosses because, you know, they're easy to rail against when things are bad, and easy to thank when things go well. I mean, as much as Mets fans despise the Wilpon ownership, and they made a magical run in 2015 to game five of the World Series, you know what? You didn't hear much Wilpon bashing for at least 6 months after that.
Well, yeah, a little bit of time, and then it wears off. You think a championship, I said, gives you 5-year halo, but it really doesn't. Mike, you know, for me in Baltimore, we have these two teams. The Ravens are really a miracle, right? Like, Jack Kent Cooke never wanted them here. We had to go steal a team. It's all the money, all of that. Then the Nationals happened, and all this money was supposed to float to fund the Orioles and keep guys like Manny Machado here and all that, and the old man just screwed it up. Now we have Fredo. Bisciotti has disappeared, you know, threw me out, disappeared, stopped doing press conferences. Once Ray Rice connected with his wife's jaw on the glass elevator, they've gone in a different direction as an organization with how they treat the media, the fans, accountability, any of that. Stadium has a lot of empty seats. The football stadium, dirty little secret. It's not what it used to be. But the feeling for me with Bisciotti after 20 years and the Angelos family after 30 years, and we've now moved from where it's going to be a guy who has a boat who was a Maryland fan and a lawyer that sued people to hit the lottery to corporations, right? Like this $7 billion thing that's about to happen with the Commanders that's going to lead to wherever Bisciotti's going to go because he's not doing it to his kids. There's going to be two other owners in Baltimore at some point. For you, this is the columnist part. What's a good owner do? Cohen comes in, he's anonymous. How do you take over the Mets, become famous, and do a good job? What's a good owner in 2023?
Honestly, in some ways, you got to be lucky. I mean, I think because, you know, for Cohen, everything he does is going to be defined by the fact that he's paying $357 million for his team this year. So if he wins, you almost can't, you know, he can't win because Well, of course you're going to win. You have $307 million payroll. And if he loses, you know, then all of a sudden they break out the old worst team money can buy scenario. So it's almost losers. But I think what you do, and I think what Cohen has done specifically, I'll speak just to him, is that what he's done is he's tried to set up, thing one for him is a set up an infrastructure of how to do things well. He's borrowed from teams that do well. Look, the Dodgers, maybe the Orioles can't aspire to be what the Dodgers are because they just don't have the resources, but the Mets can. So they can have, the best analytics team in place. They can have the best scouting team in place. They can have a lot of checks and balance system just because, the owner can afford to pay for it, and that's the primary advantage. So people look at owners and say, well, they can get as many players as they want. But to me, the successful operations are good operations. So you look at the very best franchises in sports, they not only have really good players who are making the teams competitive every year, but they have really good front office types who are top of the line with what they do, who are cutting edge, who aren't afraid of new systems and new thoughts and new ideas. And going right down, again, we were talking about, they have smart PR people who understand that while ours is a contentious relationship, they can still, even in 2023, it's helpful to have, a favorable column in the newspaper. It's good to have favorable chatter on talk radio. They don't have to generate all of the good news themselves in their own house organ operations. Good PR people understand that even if, maybe you and I don't have the uber influence that maybe Dick Young or John Stedman had, a couple of generations ago, it's still good to have a working relationship with the press, not an always antagonistic relationship with the press. I know what you've gone through with the Ravens. We've all gone through it up here with the Knicks, who are just, they run the worst media operation in the world, and it kills them. They're just too dumb to realize that it kills them. Jalen Brunson's having one of the great seasons in the league this year. Nobody knows who he is, what he does, what he's doing, because the Knicks operate their PR department, as if they're living in Des Moines. It's silly and it's really counterproductive. It's going to cost Jalen Brunson probably the most improved player award and probably a spot on one of the three All-NBA teams. And it's just ridiculous.
But the guy who runs it, that's the way he wants the media treated.
Because that's how he wants the media treated. Right. It all devolves from one person's warped view of what the media is because he's gotten ripped in the papers. Because he deserved to get ripped. None of this happens by accident.
I bet he's also gotten praised in the paper too. Maybe not for that half-assed band I saw with Henley a couple years ago, but
to a degree. Look, I get it. The fact is, he looks at the scoreboard and he sees the media, lying against him. Well, because he's done a lot of dumb things that require the media to criticize him. That's how it works.
Well, that's the way the Orioles, come on. How could you not criticize the Orioles here over 30 years if you had your eyes open, literally?
So people say, well, the media is so negative. Well, Nestor, this is what I live by. People say, all you want is clicks. All you want is people to sell newspapers. Well, yes. How do you think we make our money? We make our money from clicks. We're not a nonprofit here, but they say, well, you just do it to be negative. Well, I got news for you. You know what? When the teams around here are good, that's good for business, for our business. When the Mets are in the World Series, you can't find a paper because they've all been sold out.
Like I'd say to Steve Bisciotti, have you seen my work? Do you think I want you to lose? What benefit has it been that Peter Angelos has come in and destroyed the city for 30 years? My last name's Aparicio. This show started with baseball, and which brings me full circle. Yankees. Where are you? We talk Mets. Yankees are the ones here. It's fascinating. I'm home with a New York columnist, and all we talked about is Mets.
Which is funny because, we talk about owners. You talk about the Steinbrenner family specifically. Look, George was over the top. He loved the back page, he's a guy who got it. He really was the old school that said, I don't care if you're ripping me or you're praising me. As long as you're talking about me, that's all that matters. And so that's, that's catnip for reporters. His son is very much the other way. He seems like a very good guy for as much as we get to know him. But he does not seize the spotlight in any way, shape or form. Doesn't want the spotlight. And certainly isn't inclined to be like his father, which is to be over the top financially. Now he's got more people to answer to than his father did, here's the thing about the Yankees, though, and you're right. It's funny because people criticize Steinbrenner all the time, and I laugh. They criticize Brian Cashman, and I laugh. All the Yankees have gone to the playoffs, something like you know 22 times last, or 22 times the last 25 years, something like that. That's a pretty good run. You know, they're in it every year. They won five championships since 96.
I always think like somebody that's been to all those World Series games back in the Torrey era. And I mean, I did all of it a dozen times. I thought that if I were me and a Yankee fan and I had Billy Crystal hat on, I'd be a little bored with it. You know what I mean? Like they win too much.
Yeah. I mean, I think even Yankees fans would admit that they get spoiled. Look, because they've been encouraged to. I mean, look, the Yankees' own mission statement tells you that if they don't win a championship every year, it's not a good year. You know, I think that's a pretty impossible standard, but you know, good for them. That's I'd rather have that if I was a fan than somebody who you question whether they really care one way or the other. And look, there's never been a question with the Yankees. They care. And the people, and you look, I mean, Hal Steinbrenner isn't as out there as George was, but you look, he wants to win. He wants another championship. He wants another parade. He does. You know, he just doesn't do it the same way his father did.
Mike Vaccaro does it in the way that Oscar Madison did, and in the way that John Steadman and all the greats do it. The New York Post, you can follow him out there. It's good to see you back doing what you're doing, holding the power, holding accountable to power. And I appreciate you coming on and always being a good guy on the show. I'm sorry I won't run into you in press boxes, but maybe we'll get a seat in Yankee Stadium out there on one of those $9 nights and see Nestor. I didn't even ask you about Nestor Cortez. I'm the other Nestor now, Mike.
Yeah. Depends. I mean, I think he's still got some work to do, Nestor. But he's terrific. Put it this way, he honors your name well because he's not only good at what he does, but he's also a good guy.
You know what? I tell him that I loved him when he was here, the 10 minutes he was here and his ERA was infinity, that I championed him. And I told everybody that a Nestor was going to come back and haunt the Orioles. So we'll see. Go. Mike Vaccaro here from the New York Post. We're doing a Maryland Crab Cake Tour, Costas and Fadley's. And then next week on Thursday, we are at Pappas. Come on out to on the 13th up to Bel Air and join us. Our friends at Window Nation, our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll be giving away some scratches. We've had some cool winners on this Instant Lottery thing too, Costas and Ed Fadley's. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.